From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump's administration has presented a plan for immigration reform that appears to promise concessions to both Democrats and Republicans. The surprise proposal inspired headlines that suggested Trump wanted to offer a path to citizenship for 1.8 million undocumented immigrants, twice the number of young immigrants who were registered under the DACA program. But the details suggest that a path to legalization for the so-called Dreamers will come at a steep price, a huge reduction in legal migration, what conservatives love to term chain migration, but is in fact families attempting to unite with one another, and the building of Trump's border wall with Mexico. My guest is Juan Escalante. He's a communications manager with America's Voice and a DACA recipient. He recently wrote a piece for Huffington Post called "The White House Dreamer Deal Isn't a Compromise, It's a Racist Ransom Note." Welcome to the program, Juan.
Thank you so much for the invite. Pleasure to be here.
So first, what exactly is he promising Dreamers, those people who are registered under DACA?
Right. So what we've seen essentially promised by the president outlined in the White House proposal is essentially a pathway towards citizenship, which is obviously welcome with open arms, which is something that we have been fighting for the past, 10 plus years. But at the same time, it does have a 10 to 12 year waiting period. That means that despite the fact that we have applied for the DACA program, we've passed several background checks, and some of us have gone through this program, two or three times, 4 or 6 years, we don't get any sort of credit for that amount of time. And although the pathway towards citizenship is long, we want to make sure that whatever deal is struck at the end of the day, that, and obviously that does not resemble anything like the White House's plan, even if it does come with a steep price, in terms of waiting time, we'll have to mitigate that and discuss that when the time comes. But as of right now, we deem that the White House proposal is a non-starter, even with the concession of pathway to citizenship for Dreamers.
Let's actually stay just for a minute before we get to the negative parts of the proposal. Let's stay on the issue of the pathway to legalization as part of this proposal. And I'm not sure how much detail it actually has, so some of it may still be up in the air. But
yeah,
during that waiting period, would those young folks who were on this pathway to citizenship still be deportable, or would their deportation be deferred? Because that was the important aspect of DACA. The DA in DACA stood for deferred action.
Yeah. So it's a little bit unclear. It's very broad in its definition. I would say that for those individuals that have seen the outline that the White House released last week on Thursday, it doesn't really give a lot of meat. It's mainly a bullet point outline as to what they essentially would like to concede. And to me, as a skeptical of this administration, I wouldn't, imagine anything else than a very treacherous path, throughout 10 or 12 years to actually qualify for that citizenship clause that they embedded in there, meaning that, potentially whatever outline comes out in terms of legislation from Congress that resembles this White House proposal will probably have some very steep, demands for those seeking to benefit from the citizenship offer that the president has. So despite the fact that there's a 10 to 12 year waiting period to actually become a U.S. citizen, I wouldn't suspect anything less that it's going to be filled with all kinds of traps, and it's going to look more of like a maze than an actual straight shot to the moon.
And of course, one huge reason why people are undocumented in this country is because the legal system is so set up to stymie folks, especially people from certain countries, and there are quotas. And it's, as someone who's been through the legal immigration system myself, I can personally attest to how complicated, difficult, and long-winded it is. But what about the fact that it would be 1.8 million people that might be eligible, rather than the, so far about 800,000-ish people have taken advantage of DACA. So that's the number of Dreamers that we think, there are in the country. Where does the 1.8 million number come from, as far as you know?
Yeah, well, so far, the DACA program, as when it was launched by President Obama back in 2012, it gave a lot of, stipulations as to who could qualify. You should have arrived to the United States before the age of 16, and there's an age cap. You have to have lived in the United States for a certain number of years. And what this does, the proposal by the White House, that is, is essentially broaden that number to include a broader pool of DACA recipients who may have aged out. For example, a really good friend of mine, Julio Calderon down in South Florida, he does not qualify for DACA just because he arrived to the United States, I believe it's a week after his 16th birthday. Oh, so had he arrived 2 weeks before, he would have been eligible for this program. And that's always like essentially the point of discussion is essentially what kind of like limitations on age or where exactly the line is drawn as to who is the pool of beneficiaries that would essentially be allowed to age in into this program. So there's all kinds of cases out there. And despite the fact that, you know, DACA has done a great deal of benefit for the undocumented youth and immigrant community in the United States, it's often easy to forget that there's people that may have qualified for this program had they not been for the age caps or the age requirements here and there. So I'm inspired to see that there is actually some sort of consensus that, you know, there's more than 800,000 dreamers out there.
Right. And of course, all of those dreamers have family members. There are mixed status families. And time is running out because the DACA program essentially expires in about a month. And the politicians in Congress have simply kicked the ball down the curb with the fight over the spending bill, where Democrats had been holding, or some Democrats at least had been holding out for some sort of immigration plan. So all of this may come to a head in early February with this plan. But let's talk about the price that Trump might try to extract from this so-called concession, because he's calling it a huge concession to Democrats to have a dream of 1.8 million people have a potential path to citizenship. So there is the part of the wish list of many of the anti-immigrant folks that some, including yourself, ascribed to John Kelly and Stephen Miller inside the White House, pushing for the end to so-called chain migration and the building of this border wall. What does the proposal include on those two issues?
Well, number one, let's talk about the wall and border security as a whole. Essentially, what the White House is outlining and proposing is that Congress appropriates a budget of $25 billion to essentially appropriate money for the wall, hire more agents for internal and external border enforcement and security within. So that's more custom border patrols and more ICE agents. They're talking about essentially implying some sort of border security out there in the northern border with Canada that we share as well. So the sum of money that is that the White House is requesting from taxpayers, let's be honest here, this is not coming out of any sort of deal or any sort of regulation with Mexico. Mexico is not paying for the wall, which is essentially a campaign line that the president liked to tout to his base throughout his campaign, and up to this day continues to do so. This is essentially taxpayer money that is essentially being earmarked for an unprecedented amount of law enforcement agents and essentially construction along the southern border and some in the northern border as well. That could have, you know, a significant impact on local communities down in the southern border with Mexico. And at the same time, it's essentially a huge stab to our budget. You know, talk about fiscal being fiscally responsible and conservative at a time where border crossings are all-time low, and we continue to see, you know, massive improvements on the amount of security that, you know, continues to be present at the border. So that's on the first and foremost. On the second point, on the so-called very dismissive term of chain migration, which has been weaponized, by the White House to essentially assert itself as a way that, you know, all kinds of people come into the United States by, you know, just a simple petition. They make it seem like, you know, you just file paperwork and people immediately pop up here. It's actually quite false. The process is extremely complicated and convoluted, just as illegal immigration process is.
Chain migration, we mean things like, for example, me, I'm a naturalized citizen. If I wanted to bring my elderly parents to the United States,
correct,
I could apply for a green card for them. I could sponsor them. And I understand that they're trying to sort of now reduce that to immediate spouses and children only, right?
Yeah, they're trying to reclassify what's known as the nuclear family, right? Hmm. So essentially, this so-called chain migration is nothing short of what the correct terminology is family reunification, mm-hmm. which allows individuals, just as you mentioned, U.S. citizens to sponsor immediate family. So when you think about your immediate family, you're thinking about essentially your spouse, your children, potentially your brothers, and your immediate parents. You know, what is more nuclear than that, or what's more direct?
Right. We're not talking about aunts and uncles and cousins and granduncles. We're talking about parents, and we're talking about siblings.
So I think, you know, when it comes down to this, is the distortion of what exactly means to be a nuclear family that essentially has a lot of people worried, especially because of the kind of history that this country has had, right, throughout the past number of years, decades, of essentially allowing, you know, the family bond to, you know, overcome all kinds of barriers, because, you know, we're essentially promoting that message that we want families to remain united and continue to build their communities and continue to push this country forward as a whole. And for us to pretend to ignore that by trying to reclassify the term nuclear family to just include a spouse and children is continuously detrimental to our values as a nation. And it continues to undermine, you know, the belief and the tradition that we often pride ourselves in as a country of touting that this is a nation built by immigrants. And, you know, that means parents, siblings, and other components of the nuclear family that Donald Trump and his allies in the White House are trying to redefine.
And of course, we know that Donald Trump he's made it pretty clear the kinds of immigrants he wants and the kinds of immigrants he doesn't want. He, I'm sure, would be quite happy with chain migration, so-called chain migration of Norwegian families, but not those people with a skin tone that is seen as undesirable for people to. And, you know, you have this myth built up, well, people just start drag along their entire clan with them from their home countries and then take over the United States. The demonization of immigrants seems to be built into this proposal. So how much of it do you attribute to Stephen Miller, who's essentially a very overt alt-right so-called proponent of reducing and eliminating all immigration? I mean, he is essentially the anti-immigrants hitman in the White House.
Yeah. So, you know, for those individuals that may not be familiar who Stephen Miller really is, it's essentially a former staffer of Senator Jeff Sessions, now the Attorney General, who was one of the biggest opponents of any sort of immigration reform or pro-immigration measure that to come through the Congress. Stephen Miller has a very troubling record of essentially going out and making public statements throughout his youth about essentially the changing of America. And he doesn't mean this in any sort of way, you know, in terms of our landscape. He means this demographically. And, you know, throughout the past couple of months leading up to essentially writing up a profile of who this individual is, it's essentially a lot of incendiary and extremely racist remarks that he's made throughout the years. And now he's a figure of the White House, essentially a very shadowy person that, you know, every now and then comes to the news as a senior aide and policy advisor to the president. And he gets to spend this time with the president, essentially promoting his agenda and capitalizing on the fact that the president seems to suffer from a very serious short attention span and continues to push this very anti-immigrant, very xenophobic sentiment across the president, despite the fact that he shares a lot of beliefs, it seems, you know, depending on the day of the week and his mood. With both Democrats and Republicans about how to deal with the Dreamers and so on.
Hmm. What about the issue of the diversity visa lottery? That is also something that is under attack in Trump's proposal. What is the diversity visa lottery for those people who don't know?
Essentially a program that is allowed, just as it's in the name, to allow diversity of individuals who come into the United States from countries that are typically underrepresented. It's an application process and individuals are, you know, granted a visa if they're deemed if their names pops up essentially in this quote unquote lottery that is sponsored through the United States. And even if you're able to actually win this lottery, there's still essentially the question as to whether or not you're able to claim it, whether or not your paperwork is in order, whether or not you have a passport up to date. So there's a lot of requirements that go into this. This is not essentially a stamp that you get or a bracelet that you get on your wrist and you get to come to the United States just as freely as you come. So slashing the diversity lottery visa is essentially another attempt by the White House and the Trump administration to essentially slash diversity, you know, people of of colors, or and I'm not going to quote the president on this, but undesirable countries, as he referred to a couple of weeks you know, ago.
Well,
as
maybe we'll say S-hole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Got to make sure that remark's there.
So the another aspect of what Trump is trying to do with this immigration proposal is that he is trying to choose the side of the anti-immigrant supporters in his base against the pro-immigration supporters in his base. And by pro-immigration supporters, I actually, maybe that's too nice a term to refer to them, but the Koch brothers are apparently up in arms about Trump wanting to cut legal migration, and have warned on Saturday President Trump and members of Congress to avoid any, quote, arbitrary reductions in immigration as part of negotiations over Dreamers. And corporate America, of course, likes to have lots of immigration because it's a source of cheap labor that's often sort of vulnerable, and so they can keep them docile, right? And without rights. So do you think that the pro-immigrant part of Trump's base may prevail on him to back off on some of these issues?
Well, I mean, you know, here's the thing, is that what we've seen thus far from the from the Trump administration is essentially a proposal, not a piece of legislation. I know that this will essentially be morphed in some way, shape, or form by Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, and Senator Perdue from Georgia, and, you know, other counterparts in the House of Representatives, you know, to essentially mold itself as closely aligned with what the White House has presented. We'll hear on Tuesday what the president has to say regarding the State of the Union, and a hard pitch sell to the American public about his immigration agenda and his initiatives. But, you know, this is a very considered a very widely unpopular proposal. And whether or not it actually makes it through the Congress is another thing altogether, especially because, like as you mentioned, then we're discussing right now, is this moderate camp in the Republican Party. You know, it's not exactly a minority. It's a lot of individuals who may seem themselves vulnerable politically if they were to support such a measure. And number two, it doesn't align with the values or the values of the people that they were elected to represent in the Congress. So I think that, you know, moving forward in this debate, as we continue to march and get increasingly closer to the March 5th deadline when the DACA program expires, is taking the approach of narrowing down the scope of the changes to immigration and stop, you know, talking about anything that doesn't have to do with the following two things. One, a sensible border package, which is essentially what, you know, the Trump administration and Republicans have agreed upon, that we need to beef up border security. And as long as it's reasonable and doesn't cost us $25 billion and comes with a wall attached to it, we can have a conversation about it, because, you know, we're talking about taxpayer dollars there. And two, protecting Dreamers, you know, pass the Dream Act. You know, there's about four or five pieces of legislation right now sitting in the House of Representatives that could address this issue. Bipartisan support on all of them, and we're still having this debate.
You know,
it's time for politicians to get to work.
And you said bipartisan support. There's also huge public support for Dreamers to have legal status. So among the public, a majority support the Dream Act and what it would entail. So there's finished pieces of legislation that are ready to be adopted, passed, and signed into law. Well, Juan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in Huffington Post from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Juan Escalante is the communications manager of America's Voice. He's also a DACA recipient himself. He recently wrote a piece for Huffington Post called "The White House Dreamer Deal Isn't a Compromise, It's a Racist Ransom Note." I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.